This is a recording from the first degrowth conference in North America, held in Vancouver, Canada, from April 29th to May 1st, 2010. Each speaker is introduced by author Rex Wehler.
You know, one nice thing about, for me, in working with Anita over these years is sometimes I feel like I'm all alone. And years ago, I did feel like I'm all alone. Nobody wants to talk about this. And I met people like Anita and Bill Reese and Rick Balfour and Dave Hughes and some of these other people. And now that's kind of becoming more of a topic that we talk about and we know about. And so we're all sort of feeling around, searching around for solutions and what do we do. Sometimes it's also good to go back and actually talk about the information that this is based on. When you go out and talk to people, you don't have to be apologetic for saying things that, like, degrowth is inevitable, slowing down is inevitable, peak oil is here, and so forth. But one person that in our community who is really working on solutions, doing something about it, the ways to organize community, I see many of them here tonight, actually. But one of them, Rick Balfour, is a architect in Vancouver, has been involved in social planning in Vancouver. He works with me on the Vancouver Peak Oil Executive. He's written a book called The Strategic Sustainable Planning, a Civil Defense Manual for Cultural Survival. He wrote that with Eileen McAdam Keenan. He's an architect, a strategic planner. He's a director of Metro Vancouver Planning Coalition, or he was, and he works on the Vancouver Peak Oil Committee. Rick has done a lot of work in how we should be building and thinking our communities, thinking about the planning of our communities. He's worked with the Regional Planning Department. He's on their case all the time. He's not letting them get away with inappropriate planning based on outmated concepts. Ladies and gentlemen, Vancouver's Rick Balfour.
Just to know, seeing where this came from, I've been part of the growth industry all my life, and dealing with an architect and planner is always dealing with growth, never with degrowth, but some of us feel we have to take another path. And the Planning Commission in 2005, we took a look around, and we've been talking a long time about how we tried to deal with limits to growth and the Club of Rome and design with nature sort of things, and planning doesn't really deal with those kind of things, and they're dealing with linear projections all the time. So we said, look, we've got to stop looking at linear projections. You can't keep doing that. We have to take a look at lateral planning, sidestepping, looking at other solutions. Part of the design process is always to look at even the things you think are crazy, because that's sometimes where the best things come from. This is a picture of the manual cover, and I'm going to have to go really fast. This is usually an hour's presentation. I'm doing it in 9 minutes. You've heard lots of things about hockey stick graphs. This is one about CO2. In contrast, when I mentioned the City of Vancouver and how we're approaching planning, the thing that we keep getting presented in planning about that image of the city, that is not a sustainable city. In terms of building form, the pattern on the ground, these cities cannot be fed in the future. They cannot be powered when the energy's gone. All the things we take it for granted don't work. This is a critical time in history. You've got a combination of human development. You build buildings for 50 or 100 years. We have more buildings than we need for the population on the earth. They're just in the wrong place. The more important thing is we don't have the green places where they should be. And so one of the things we look at in urban development is this impact of Hubbert's curve on social planning and urban form. Based on the Club of Rome warnings in 1972, we actually should have started doing something then, but of course we didn't. If you look at the middle of the graph, as we're at the peak, one of the things that happens is the price of oil takes off. And those shaded bars, as we go over the edge, and we're approaching that time, creates a period of confusion leading to collapse. John Cooksey, who's making How to Boil a Frog, said this is the scariest graph in the world he'd seen to it at that time, because it now introduced that little curve there that says, human die-off cycle? ? Anyhow, built form. You've seen this, the long-range period of history where the peak oil is not the Hubbert's curve, it's actually that steep thing in the middle. The trouble is that curve of oil is also the curve of human population. And there's all kinds of references in our book. One of the things about our manuals, we put it together because other cities asked us to do it so they could carry out. Half the book is really a compendium of source material from climate change and peak oil over the last 30 or 40 years. I'm not going to explain these. I don't have time. I'm hoping the graphics give you a mental image, what those things mean when Hubbert's curve is thought of as a social diagram, not an oil diagram. Since 2005, a whole bunch of things we thought were going bad have got worse. So this is an update on that Hubbert's curve. What this does is it brings together Dave Murphy's update of the peak of the oil graph, which is the brown line. And it's called the shark fin now because increased consumption means the depletion is hurried up. And the horrible thing is that the EROI's figures are going up, so that it means that it's going to cost more and more faster than we thought before. Now, I'm going to show you another graph in a minute, which is going to talk about trigger points in carbon dioxide and how it relates to planning for cities. But before I get there, there's a really nasty curve, which is not blue but red on this thing. And what this deals with is the trigger points from burning fossil fuels, which changes the climate and causes ice sheet collapse, which nobody wants to talk about. Those that are doing the research are being told to shut up. And we have all kinds of denialists around the world telling everybody, it doesn't happen, don't talk about it, etc. And in a global picture, this is sort of a cartoon. The next book is called Living on Mountain Slopes, Post-Oil Resettlement for BC. But it applies around the world. You need to take a look at how these factors are going to increase mass migration. So what this talks about here is the impact of growing deserts, rising oceans, and what does that mean for places like BC? Because we are one of the new Edens. There's only places, some places on Earth nobody's going to be able to live, other places where everybody's going to be wanting to go to. So one of the things we're doing in the next book is testing the scenario for 35 million people in BC within 20 years. Because when you take a look at what's happening to the south of us and all around us, that kind of thing could be happening. In terms of the pattern of cities, historically on the left, towns had a certain pattern. As we go to the top, we have patterns of community that are not sustainable, and they can't be projected into the future. They're going to collapse. So we either find a soft curve and a new pattern of community on those things, on those soft path curves to the right, or we go through the floor, where the one goes below the graph. The city of the future, in that case, does not even approach the standards of 1870. It will be approaching the Stone Age. So this presentation is about getting people to work together to find good solutions before we need to. When we ran these seminars in the Planning Commission, we called them war games on purpose because we put people into stressful conditions. And the first thing they did is they went Mad Max, and everybody wanted to buy a gun and do each other in before they could solve the problem. What these books are about and approaches we're trying to take is getting people to realize they have to work together. And about this, there's also, I think, understatement on where we've crossed the line. This is a graph that shows we've exceeded some boundaries and we haven't approached the boundaries in others. Most of these things are too conservative. Going beyond 2011, the impacts are accelerating. And it's not just oil. We're running out of all kinds of key resources because we're consuming so fast. Everything you take for granted around you has key elements in it that are not going to be available shortly. And recycling isn't going to happen. Every once in a while, especially in oil, I don't know if Dave Hughes talked about this, but this map on the lower left is the best and brightest hope for the states because there's shale gas. Not very good recovery. I think he touched on that. In order to understand that we're going to have to change the pattern of community and have learned to, you know, double up, live in different places, this is a graph that was done to show the impact of rising oil prices from $100 to $400 a barrel over going through this shuffling of the curve where prices are going up and supply is going down, and the impact this has on family incomes at different levels and how it shuffles people into a different standard of living, a lower income. A lot of the jobs we now take for granted, me included, white-collar, serviced, digital industry, can't be supported without the oil. So we're going to be doing other things, mostly farming. Which brings us to the point of this presentation, is we need access to land. So part of this is going to be about post-oil resettlement in BC, the new Homestead Act. So as we've got mass migration patterns changing around the world, how we look at the urban pattern is important, because what we now see as an expanding urban area is going to have several things happening. We have to save the farmland. We actually have to claw back what we've lost. Some of the towns itself are going to have to convert to green areas, and a good example of this is the death of the urban areas of Detroit, where they're now trying to create compact villages and recreate farmland. This is the trigger point diagram, which is an interpretation of Mark Linus's book, 6 Degrees. So these points show what happens as we cross over certain lines, which triggers things, and the worst one is the ice sheet collapse, which all kinds of people poo-poo, but if there's any chance at all of it happening in strategic planning, you do look at it and you make it a consideration, because it's foolish not to. And of course, you know about dying aquifers all around the world, and a combination of things at the national level, because this is about affecting not just local policy, but provincial and national policy too, because all these things are affecting us in terms of loss of forests, loss of aquifers, permafrost blowing up in the swamps of the north as they're melting. China is going to be contributing acid rain to the West Coast because of the increased coal burning. It goes on and on. Now, a lot of this stuff you can find on a website where we have this plancanada.com, and I just got a warning for 2 minutes. Okay. In 1969, the federal government called for a plan for mid-development Canada corridor. We're taking another look at this to see if this is part of the solution of developing not towns as we know them, but resettlement for sustainable hamlets and farms on the edge of the boreal forest, which is also creeping north. You can also find that report on plancanada.com and the Winnipeg slide series. I won't deal with the summary. I haven't got time. One of the things about rising oceans is this has happened before. At the lower level there, the coastlines in 6000 BC actually wiped out cities we've just discovered. We thought were myth in the Bhagavad Gita. The Sumerians, the Persians, and the Indians were actually carrying on together a long time before, and our civilization is older. And so when we look at the rising oceans and moving cities upland, it's nothing new. This takes a look at the way we treat BC and the fact we've got potential land in BC that we can use. And in fact, we've got 3% ALR. If 10% of the remaining 97% was considered farmable and for small towns and hamlets, that's 3 times the ALR area. So you don't build in the farmland, obviously. And we're just going to flash through this. This is the image of what happens to Vancouver if we get the 60-meter tide rise possible by 2080 if the ice sheet collapse was triggered by the 4-degree increase in global temperature. Note on cities in particular, big cities, big problems. The alpha cities of the world cannot be serviced and cannot be fed. So this, go look it up. The alpha cities of the world, with all their attributes, they can't be sustained. The point is that we have no choice but to move. Think about it. We need new policies in order to do it. We're going to have to approach the hillsides in a different way, and part of this is learning from the old world and the old patterns of community, and we've got to rediscover them before they're too late. It also means we have to rediscover the old ways of doing things because the current ones aren't going to be working. So just take a look at BC in a different way. There's a whole section on here on marbleization, urban triage, and how communities adjust to change that we're going to go through, which obviously I don't have in 2 seconds. So I'm going to leave it at that. Oh, this SSP manual is ordered through local bookstores, UBC, or Old City Foundation at telus.net, or via the Peak Oil page. It's called SSP, Strategic Sustainable Planning, a Civil Defense Guide to Cultural Survival, because one of the things that came out of the sessions with the Planning Commission is it's about saving culture, saving your family and your community, because most of these things are at risk. This comes from my own background in sociology and some military planning, so you approach this thing as a military project, because believe it or not, those few people that are actually looking at this are those kind of people, and you don't like their kinds of solutions. PlanCanada.com. PlanCanada is one word, lowercase, .com. The other ones have to deal with population control or something funny, I don't know. No, but it's also not sustainable in its present form. And if you want to talk about the reasons, fine, including high-rise buildings are not sustainable, for instance, and we keep trying to promote them as the golden solution. They're not. And that's where you can read. Pardon me? Well, first of all, if you look at European cities, their mid-rise form of 6 to 8 stories, they actually have the same density as 30-story towers of Vancouver. They have the same floor space with half the envelope, therefore less to build, and therefore less to heat and cool. They're also within the 70-foot sighting distance so children can see their mother's face, which you can't do at 30 stories.
That was Speaker Rick Balfour, introduced by Rex Whaler. This recording comes from the first Degrowth Conference in North America, held in Vancouver, Canada, from April 29th to May 1st, 2010. Find more audio on the Economic Crisis page in the Audio On Demand menu at ecoshock.org. Find out more about this conference at www.d-growth.com/Vancouver.